this is a transformative genre. Mm-hmm. And who you are going into it is not who you're going to be on the other side. And someone can tell you that, you can say that, you can read that, you can think that, but you are not going to understand what it means for your life until you do it.
Do you like books?
I'm outlining a new writing project.
Who wrote this book?
Read it. What are you reading?
Sometimes I write something.
What are you writing?
Have you written anything lately?
I'm Amanda Stern, and this is Bookable. On today's show, the art of vulnerability. When you work in a field that demands exposing your deepest self to the public, it comes with a humbling and sometimes shocking dose of vulnerability. And opening yourself up like that will, no doubt, change you. So we asked Mira Jacob, author of the award-winning graphic memoir Good Talk and featured guest on Bookable's very first episode, to moderate a special roundtable about just that. And she invited two incredible guests to join her. Kiese Lehmann wrote the extraordinary memoir Heavy, which won the 2019 Andrew Carnegie Medal, which is major, FYI, and Saeed Jones, whose memoir How We Fight for Our Lives, which won the Kirkus Award, also major, excuse me, to talk about how their memoirs changed them in ways expected and not. I found this particular conversation riveting and enlightening. I learned more about how a book's success can hurt the people you love, and how the isolation that comes with touring and being alone in hard times can almost do a person in. Here's Mira.
Kiese, a few months ago, you did this post, and it said something to a piece of me that I had been carrying forward in my heart. One of the things that has occurred to me is we all came out with these books, and we've all been kind of wandering through this America, which is the America in which Trump was elected, although that didn't happen in a vacuum, and we all know that, right? So I think we're in this fraught time in America, but I think each of our memoirs would testify to the fact that there's never been a not fraught time in America. This is just the moment that many white Americans, especially those that might call themselves liberal or progressive, are kind of seeing it. And we all have had these books out, and it's been in a moment where people want to hear about what our lives are, and we write them in a way to talk about what our lives are, but the process of putting them out into the world changes in many ways our relationship to the art. And I know you guys have been interviewed up and down about your books. I've read and listened to so many of those interviews, but this interview isn't just about the memoirs that you made. It's about the process and the process of being public with it. Mm. And so that's what I wanted to talk about today. And Kiese, I wanted to read this little thing that you wrote through the Facebook post. There's a way to write a book like my last book that doesn't leave you ashamed and scared and alone. I didn't write mine that way. I know a lot of y'all are creating art right now. Please build heartwork into your practice. Tend to your heart every day, and don't assume because you're writing from the heart that you're tending to your heart. Artfully tearing your heart open and selling that heartfelt rendering to the highest corporate bidder has its consequences. Please tend to your heart when creating the art our hearts need, the art that helps your family eat. We all deserve to have healthy hearts. Please believe. I'm trying to believe too.
Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. So I read that. When I read that, I was about to get ready for the millionth event, for the millionth public event for a book, and actually just started crying and then had to just put it away and put it down. But I felt like you saw something about the process that I have been grappling with, which is what it is like to write for an audience and then take it into a corporate and often white America that tokenizes that experience. So I wanted to ask you guys, because I think like right from the start, I think maybe if we can break it down into the moving parts of how this happens, it might help. Mm. It might help us, and it might help other people listening to this. So one of my questions just to start us off is like, when did you know you were writing a memoir? Like, when did that occur to you? Because for me, I didn't admit it until my publisher put memoir onto the subtitle in my book. Mm. Like that wasn't what I had intended to do, But I'm curious about both of you. Did it come to you earlier? Did you know when you started it that it was going to be this? KSA, you want to start?
Sure. I didn't know. You know, I knew I'm not sure what to think about titles or genres. You know what I mean? Like I knew I wanted to write. And then, you know, maybe 2 years after I started to work on this, I really started to think about the memoir, and I was judging some contest. So I had to read a ton of memoirs that year. It was LA Times LA Times Autobiographical Prose Award, which ironically I won a few years later, but I was a judge for that. And then I was like, oh shit, like, let me think about one, the difference between autobiography and memoir and what American memoir does and doesn't do. And I was writing into like the familial stuff all that time. And like that word memoir, it just gave me, in some way, it distracted me from like the hard shit that I was writing. Do you know what I mean? Like, because then I was just like, okay, how can you make an intervention into this genre form that already exists? As opposed to what I was trying to do, which was trying to do that hard work, right? Like trying to talk about violence and addiction and different kinds of abuse that I survived and different kinds of abuse that I perpetrated. And, you know, like, so having the memoir title helped me sort of get through the hard work in this fucked up way, you know? What about y'all?
I mean, I would say... In the earliest iterations of me, knowing that I was working on a book that was drawn from my personal experiences, I was saying that it was going to be a book of... Oh, can you hear me?
No, I can't. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. That it was going to be a book of linked essays. Mm-hmm. One, because the personal essay, you know, was a form that I was most comfortable with in terms of writing prose, but also because I think... at the time, and this is way back, I mean, this I'm talking 2012, you know, I think I felt that the word memoir implied a kind of entitlement, arrogance, particularly as, you know, I was still in my mid-20s at this time. So I felt like I had seen certainly a lot of older white people, but also at the time I felt like there was a whole genre of books by like young white men, women, queer, all over, whatever, but always white people who had written these memoirs about, you know, kind of being young and messy. And I was like, that's not, I don't know if that's the space I'm trying to enter or my intention, you know? So I was really hesitant. I think in the long run though, it was a lot of insecurity, you know, because it ultimately took a series of conversations with my agent who has, you know, represented women like Audre Lorde and Jackie Woodson, who was just like, you deserve to tell your story on your own terms. Which in the long view, like now, as I talk to you, I feel like that's what a memoir is, telling your story on your own terms, right? And that can mean a lot of different things, but she really helped me feel like, no, you deserve this. And as long as you don't think you do, like you're going to have mumble mouth every time you need to explain the concept for this book to people. You know what I mean? And so this is something, frankly, you need to deal with. You know what I mean? If we're going to go any further. That's kind of how she brought it to me. And I kind of took it home. And sat with what she had said. And yeah, I mean, it was like the moment I was like, okay, this is what I'm doing. And my version of a memoir does not have to be even in conversation with those other examples that I've been so anxious about. Like, that's none of my business, actually, you know? And the moment I realized that, it was actually pretty freeing.
That's amazing. It also sounds like there's a lot of trust between you and your agent. Like there was a way in which, did that feel accurate to you? That there was a lot of trust?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, we have an interesting relationship. I mean, she's, you know, a white, you know, Jewish woman in her 80s that there's a lot of different, we have very different communication styles. For example, I think if you saw the two of us separately, I don't think you would go, oh yeah, Saeed and Charlotte are obviously just thick as thieves. You know what I mean? But you know, trust, I think, is deeper and ignores a lot of optics, you know, because I think for me, when I think of trust, it's more like when we come to those moments when I really need to be heard and I really need to hear you, can I count on you? Can I count on you? And I don't know what the face of that person's going to look like necessarily. And I've learned that it's not always going to align with, you know, my brand or the way, you know, I might easily think of who do I trust. But I've learned with someone like Charlotte, for example, that when that moment comes, I can count on her.
That's a lot. Yeah, did you have kind of a voice of trust in your experience? Did you have someone that you felt like this person's not telling me how to do it, but helping me access the parts of myself that feel like they're ready to be accessed?
But you know, one of the reasons I love being in conversation, reading Saeed's work, being in conversation with Saeed and reading Saeed's work is because, like, I do this thing where I forget, like, age probably doesn't mean much to most people, shouldn't mean much to me, but, like, I always think that Saeed and I are the same age because whenever I read Saeed's work, I'm looking across at Saeed, I feel the same thing about you. But then I'm, like, reminded by shit like Saeed just said that, like, Saeed is way younger than I am. Mm-hmm. And when I was Saeed's age, like, I'd gone through two or three terrible agency relationships, two or three terrible publishing relationships, mm-hmm. where in essence everybody was like, none of the shit you're doing is gonna be read because there's not an audience for it. And so, you know, I had to independently publish those first two books. I had to sell those books out of the trunk of my car. I had to go to beauty salons and barbershops. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, by the time that I'm ready to write heavy, you know, I've got these two books that are sort of like cultish classics to a few people. So I had proved to the industry that I could sell books. So then I had my pick of agents and editors and whatnot. So the agent that I picked, I wanted an agent who was going to talk to me, honestly push me, but also just let me kind of go. You know what I'm saying? Cause I'm a messy writer who relies on revision. And PJ Mark, who was recommended to me by Lisa Lucas, you know, he let me go. And as important as my relationship with PJ was my relationship with Kathy, because Jesmyn had worked with Kathy and Kathy really wanted to work with me. And Jesmyn is just, you know, she's my sister, but she's also my heart. And so I trusted them once I saw that they trusted me. Now, there are hiccups in all relationships, especially like across race and rank and all of that. Mm-hmm. But for me, I mean, the reason Heavy could come out the way it did was because I had two people who trusted. They really trusted me. I mean, so much so that they trusted me. You know what I mean? Like, and so much so that sometimes I had to be to both of them like, yo, like, I want y'all to push back on everything I said to you. You know what I'm saying? I want you to push back. And sometimes you have to give people permission. And I think it was because I was older. Like, if I was 25, I don't think I would have said that. I don't, blah, blah, blah. But so, yeah, I don't mean to talk too long. But, yeah, I definitely had trust from my people. And more importantly for me, it was like trust in the process. My process is very strange. It's very weird. I overwrite. I write, you know, I wrote like a 600-page book that I wanted to get down to like 224. So they just trusted me. You know what I'm saying? They trusted me. And I appreciate that. I really appreciate that.
That's so interesting because I think, KSA, I probably land a little bit where you are in that, you know, it took me 20 years to get a book published because all anyone could tell me was that I was not Indian enough and I was too Indian.
Right.
Because I think their idea, honestly, I think the industry's idea of an Indian woman at that point was like a white woman, but maybe a little spicier.
Yes. You know what
I mean? It was just like,
I think you're right. Oh, God.
You know, like, let's just, and so there was never a version of me that they actually wanted to know. So, you know, I spent a lot of my adult life just writing into a void, trying to get things published and never getting them published. And then with this book, when I started putting it out, I felt like I was more addicted to the process because I was teaching myself to draw and teaching myself to have these, you know, how do I hit these conversations so that you get just the meat of them and I don't explain too much and I just let you live in the body. But like, I was so entranced by that process that actually I felt like what I did was I threw a book together almost and then I gave it to people and was like, oh my God, can I trust you or not? Mm-hmm. Which was a little bit terrifying. I want to ask you though about this thing that you said about your process. Okay, so you said that you do revision upon revision, and I feel like that shows up in Heavy so much because of the way that you question the truth and because of the way that you kind of turn it inside out. And Saeed, I mean, I feel like the most amazing thing about reading your book is that it just shuts down time in this way where I picked it up and I did not move for 5 hours.
Oh my goodness.
I lived just entirely in that moment. If there's a breathlessness to your writing that is so stunning.
Yes.
What is your process? Like, you know, Kiese said he does a lot of revision. What's yours?
Yeah, I mean, I do agree. I think for all of us, you know, I think if we think of ourselves as literary writers, revision is probably where a lot of our joy lives, you know? And we're always just trying to get to the space where revision is like the main task, because that's is such a delight. I would say it's interesting to hear what you said, KSA, like writing 600 pages to get. I think I've learned over time that I'm actually a pretty sparse writer. And I would define that in the sense of, I think relatively speaking, I have not written very much that I have not ultimately shared with readers. Sure, like sure, and I think poetry is a little different, but like sure, there are, you know, some random projects and drafts and all that, you know, on my computer, like all of that. But I think generally speaking, and especially for this memoir, I think because, you know, if the intense years of working on the book were, you know, 5 years. That entire 5 years, I was working at BuzzFeed News. And actually over the time, from the time that I sold the book to the time I finished the book, I went from someone who was working as an editor, managing a small team of like 4 or 5 people to at my peak, like managing a team of 30 people. And like managing managers of managers and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like I got to the point where I was like, I'm not even editing people's work. Like all of my meetings are about like payroll and, you know, all that kind of, like I was like, I'm the school principal. I haven't been in a classroom in months, you know, like I got to that point. And I say all that to say that when I would sit down to write, I really didn't have very much time. And so I think that, you know, just holistically, but also for the memoir itself, I'm a pretty sparse writer. What you see is kind of what you see, you know? I would work on it a lot, but I don't know. I don't think of myself as like, in terms of early drafts, like an exploratory writer. I can't do that. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to say to you, oh, I wrote 100 pages and then I threw 75 pages away. You know what I mean? Like I end up spending just a lot of time thinking I'm wasting my time, but yeah. I think I'm refining the ideas. And to me, and you know, it's somewhat similar to my relationship to a poem. Like for me, a poem happens when I have a clear, like I hear the note, I hear the first lyric, and then it's clear enough that I can sit down and follow it. And I find that in a different way, that's also true for my prose. Like I'm not ready until I just really have a fairly clear idea of where I'm going.
Okay, there's something that you said in there that is so interesting to me too, which is that it sounds to me like, because you just, one of the things you said was, when I write, I'm writing things, I know I'm going to publish them. So it's almost like you're writing knowing that there is an audience at the other end of it. Does that feel accurate?
Yeah.
Okay, Kiese, do you also have that in mind?
Oh man, this is a spooky conversation. it's spooky, fam. Because you
this
know, like
MTV Unplugged, we're there. You know,
it really because you know what Saeed said is like that's my dream process, but I'm also really terrified of only producing work that audiences can see. You know what I mean? I do that. You know what I mean? I want to be like, I don't do that, but I still do that. Even though I draft a lot, like audience is still in my mind. You know, I got a diary this summer because I was trying to finally write shit to myself that wasn't for other people. But like some of the lines were so dope, I ended up using them in essays. You know what I'm saying? So it's spooky to me because like, this is just me. You know, like I sometimes, and especially after publishing a book like Heavy, like I just don't want to always be thinking about these motherfuckers when I'm writing. You know what I'm saying? Like I just, but I can't help it if I'm gonna be honest with you. You know what I'm saying? Like so the idea of writing, you know, people are like, I write for myself and all that shit. Like I wonder what that is. And I don't know what that is anymore. You know, and honestly, I haven't known what that is for a long time. Like I can't front. Like when I'm writing, I'm thinking about many different kinds of audiences for sure. I'm trying to push back against lots of different traditions. I'm trying to expand traditions and all that. But I'm always thinking about different audiences. So I just have not been able to write quote unquote for myself. But I do use the audience to push me to discover. You know what I'm saying? Like there was stuff in, I mean, the book that I needed to write, quote unquote, for myself, the heavy that I need to write for myself that nobody saw but my editor. I mean, you know, I'm glad nobody else saw that but my editor. One, because I want to have friends. And that shit was
I want y'all to call me back.
You know what I'm saying? And it was bad. It was like the audience that I wrote for were the people that I had harmed, right? Mm. The two people specifically that I had harmed. And then in revision, you know, one, because the person didn't want that in the book, and two, because it was just too much. We had to strip that out. And then it's like three or four lines about that chapter in that book. But anyway, I'm just saying it's scary to me to think that I might never, ever create again without thinking about audience. That's spooky for me.
Yeah. I
mean, yeah. Oh, you go in there.
Well, no, I was just, yeah, you know what I was going to say is, Kiese, I think you know this. I think when we first got in contact, I had told you this, but when I started locking up when I was writing, and I'm going to ask you guys about this in a minute, like what your doubts were when you were writing, but when mine started really, really kind of digging into me, there was a point at which I just froze. And I remember writing to Caitlin and being like, I can't move forward, Caitlin Greenidge. And she was the one who said, Kiese says, write for us, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, write for us. And that us is not in any census. It's not anything that can be so easily defined. It is right. The us that you know needs the story. It's the us that is never written to. Write for us. And it helped me get myself together, yeah. Right? It helped me kind of remember, like, there's something I'm writing to out there that is not just a wall of derision or a wall of hatred or my worst doubts. There is something else that I can do in this space. But in that way, I also felt like suddenly that became my audience, like us became my audience, which is really different from, frankly, you wrote a novel, right? And I wrote a novel, and Saeed, you were writing poetry. Like there's some veil in there. There's a little bit of veil, right? Yeah.
Definitely.
But the memoir changes your relationship to the audience in such an intimate way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So absolutely. In line with that, I wanted to ask you guys, did you guys have a point of doubt in this? Did you have a point of doubt when you were writing your memoir or something that occurred to you in the process where you're like, I cannot do this, or I cannot do this the way I'd planned to? Mm. Something that sort of interrupted you. Like, I will just tell you mine, which is what I think terribly obvious, but mine is about my relationship with my husband, who's white and Jewish, but also his parents are Trump voters. And so at some point, and I've been married now for, you know, I've been with him for 20 years. And at some point, I just understood that my family that I had always known and I had always loved and felt terribly abandoned by, that I was going to chemically alter who we were by putting this book out. And I knew that in a way that was true, that has absolutely borne out. And I almost couldn't bear it in the moment.
Mm. Yeah.
And that looked like a lot of loneliness to me. It looked like loneliness from my husband, like not being able to talk to him in the way that we usually talk. It looked like loneliness from the place of pride that I come from, which is that I am a good family member. I take care of my people. And it looked like loneliness from, frankly, the Indian tradition, which is very much about family, right? Like, that's what we do. That's how we survive. So all of those things really, really got to me. I'm wondering if anything like that happened to either of you.
Yeah, I mean, I was terrified of causing harm.
Yeah.
In writing about my experiences and that idea of causing harm is complicated, right? But you know, I as I'm sure you know, you both are, I'm well versed in the way, for example, Black women have been written about and depicted by, let's just say, male artists in our kind of cultural canon. And so, you know, I was really worried, you know, about what my storytelling could mean for my family members, especially for my grandmother who's in the book, and you know, everyone. So that was something that I would say that anxiety ultimately became a positive catalyst for like ethics, you know, because it really pushed me to think through what was included in the book and what was not, and to really have like a sense that I need to have a clear answer for myself in this decision. And then I would say the broader thing that that would trip me up in terms of doubt was I love unlikable characters. I tend to think of myself as an unlikable character. And I enjoy that and I lean into it. But I will say, you know, and I mean, if any of us looking at our coming of age, right? I mean, I think we're just generally unlikable until like at least the age of 30. And then like maybe we start to ease into like a more nuanced kind of humanity, right? But I felt like as I was working on the memoir, I think being really cruel to myself. And I thought I was being like honest and deeply empathetic, but really over the course of some important conversations with my editor, I realized that there were sections in the book, particularly like, I don't know, like the college sections of the book, part three, where I was like abandoning myself, where I was like turning myself like into a villain. Right. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't like unpacking like motivations for why I was doing what I was doing. I wasn't considering that a lot of my behaviors were reactions to ongoing dynamics. And so instead I was just like, oh yeah, I was just doing like awful things and like whatever. And so that was a part of the book where I realized that I like had to go to therapy. I had to start talking about the book in therapy, which I had not expected to need to do, because I just realized that I was like, oh, if I just like stay down this road, if I keep going down this road in an unchecked way, I'm going to look up and have a really toxic relationship with myself. And isn't the point of this book to kind of like heal some wounds?
Right.
Do we write our memoirs to heal, or do we write our memoirs to wound ourselves?
Well, I mean, you know, it could go either way, but I was trying to do one of the books to help heal.
I love it.
Yes, and what about you? Did you have that? Did you hit that?
Yeah, like I'm pretty clear now on what happened with my process and my book. It's like, Saeed, like I just didn't want to hurt anyone with that book. And matter of fact, like I didn't, and you know, the person who I directly addressed in that book is my mother. And you know, that book was done-ish a long time before it came out, but I had to go back in because I still had a lot of resentment for my mama, and I just didn't want to put that book out with resentment. So I had to go back and change a lot in the book, and we had to have some other conversations. But I feel like not wanting to harm people in the writing of the book, I discovered is very different than harming people in the publishing of the book. And when I wrote that book, I did not expect, you know, like I'm a grinder. Like I'm a grinder ass writer. Like I get on the road and I grind. You know what I'm saying? Like literally I drive places when I'm asked to go places up until this. And so, you know, I thought the people who rock with my first two books would rock with this. And I was like, those are my audience. Those are people who, you know, sort of fuck with me and they understand and they're generous, but they also will call me out on things. And so I felt safe in that. But then when the shit took off and, you know, Saeed wrote a fucking incredible review and, you know, it started winning awards and stuff. Real talk, y'all, like that's when the shit started to hurt people. Mm-hmm. You know, because people that you have harmed, like even if you're working through that shit, like I just have to be, I have to be empathetic in a way that I wasn't in the beginning of this process. I think when you harm people and you write about it is one thing, but when you harm people and you write about it and you appear to be getting riches because of talking about the harm, like that shit complicates it. And in my relationships with people, I'm not trying to be woe is me. This has been an incredible process for me, incredible project. But the relationships that are probably irrevocable, like happened because so many people started to like the book. Yeah. And like some people who I hurt were just like, yo, you really out here fucking exploiting that relationship we had? And I'm like, no, fam, like I wasn't trying to exploit it. I had no idea this shit was gonna take off like that. Hey, you wanna see my old drafts? And people are like, fuck that old draft shit. You out here getting rich talking about the dirt you've done. And that's fucked up. And like, what can you say? You know what I'm saying? Like, what can you say? So
that's surreal. That's, yeah. I mean, I feel, say, did you also have a moment like that when the book took off, when it was sort of kind of beautiful?
Child. I mean, you know, I felt like, I was sitting there like, that's so Raven, just like having the
yes.
I mean, I will say this, and I, you know, one, because it is, what is it, September 2020, and a bitch is tired. I will say this, and I have not spoken about this publicly. When the book was finished and it was almost time for galleys to go out, I sent galleys of the book to immediate family members, certainly the family members who appear at the book, right? Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, and actually as it happened, because my grandmother died of health complications earlier this year, my grandmother Mildred, like actually as it happens, one of our last conversations was based on kind of like her reading the book, you know, and it was mm-hmm. a wonderful, rich, lovely conversation. It was healing, and we laughed, and I cried, and it meant a lot. I talked to my mom's sister, and it was, again, you know, like a deep, deep conversation that actually happened to take place of Mother's Day last year. My Uncle Albert, who I write about in the book, and I think I wrote about in a really positive, loving way, I sent him a galley at the same time I sent everyone else in my family galleys. I have not heard from him since.
Wow.
And I mean, even when my grandmother Mildred was sick, dying, you know, and this was in April of this year, and so it became clear, like, oh my gosh, I'm not even going to be able to travel to her funeral. Text messages was the most contact I've got from him, and I've heard nothing from the book. Like, I'm like, maybe it got lost in the mail on the way, you know what I mean? Like, it's that much, you know. And so I say all of that to say that, of course, that makes me sad. I stand mm-hmm. by how I wrote about him in the book. Mm-hmm. It underscores why, you know, queer people trying to please straight people is just like a fool's errand. Like, yeah. It's just never going to work out for us. But yeah. I would say is that, like, what you said earlier, Mira, about like understanding. And we just have to own this. We just have to own this. Publishing this work, this kind of work, is going to change relationships at the molecular level.
Yeah.
And the things we are anxious about, you know, like I was obsessed about, like, oh, my grandmother, how's she going to feel? You know what I mean? Like, you can't necessarily anticipate what's going to be the rub. But there will be a rub. And I think, you know, you have to decide how much you believe in the story, and, you know, and if you believe what you were doing is sincere and of with purpose, you know what I mean? But mm-hmm. you can't control everything. And I just think, as painful as that is to have to accept, I think that is a part of deciding to enter this particular genre.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sure. I think, you know, I had this rule for myself when I was writing, where I wrote so many short conversations, and then afterward, I kind of looked at them and I asked myself over and over again, did you write this for vindication or for clarity? Mm-hmm. Right? Did you write this for vindication or clarity? And I would just sit and meditate on that forever.
Yeah, and that's anything, the question.
I mean, that's the question, right? And so then anything that I wrote for vindication, I just cut. Mm-hmm. And even if I was like, but I want, and I was like, nope, you don't do that. But I will tell you that, like, I thought that somehow would seal me up if people were hurt. Cause I'd be like, well, I didn't write that one for vindication. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I thought that on the other side of that, I would have some very powerful place to stand from. But I will tell you that the fact that the book has hurt certain people, it lives in a place in my body. That's not something I ever escape either. Like, it lives in my body in a certain way, which is something I didn't know. I didn't know that was also going to happen. Would I not write the book? No. But I will tell you, I know that my body is now made up differently.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, right? That's so real, fam. Mm-hmm. I mean, since y'all talking honest, yeah, like, you know, up until March 10th, sort of when everybody thinks Corona started, which, you know, we now know it started before that, but mm-hmm. you know, March 10th, I was on the road. I was up in I was in Cincinnati, and then I had to go to West Virginia, and I had to go to New York. But the whole year, like, prior to March 10th, fam, like, I mean, I don't want it to be like sentimental or but like, I just really just did not want to be alive no more. You know what I mean? Like, and part of that is because of the life I've chose to lead, right? I live alone. I don't have pets. My mother isn't in the state I live in anymore. My grandmother's here, but you know, she has dementia. So in some way, like the memory of the person that I knew isn't there anymore, but she's still here. But I don't know. Like, it's just like every single day that good things happen to that book. Mm. I just felt terrible, y'all. Mm. Like, I just wanted to die, my nigga. Like, I thought I was gonna die a few times in there, but then I was like, yo, this is so, you know, you can't be that person. But I just kept thinking about the people that I had harmed with the success of that book. And I thought about being on the road and having all these people touch you. And I talked to Saeed about this before. Yeah. I felt like I didn't know you. And again, I've never talked about this, so the words are very clumsy right now, but I just didn't want to be here no more because I don't know. It's just like you just get in this process where, like, you know, your editor or the publisher sends you great things that the book is doing out in the world. And with every great thing, you know, in some way that is hurting one or two people who you literally don't want to harm, but you have harmed before. Mm. And you can't, you know, out of respect and love, you can't reach out to this person because this person is like, yo, don't talk to me, fam. Like, don't talk to me. And so it's not a woe is me thing. It's just like, I just want to be honest and say it wasn't until everybody kind of thought they could die tomorrow that I stopped wanting to really like hurt myself and kill myself over this book. I never said that, but that's how I felt. You know what I'm saying? Like that,
I feel that so much. I feel that, and that makes so much sense to me in a way, because I feel like what for me the journey was that I had written kind of from this place of community, but the process of being out in the world with it. And as you said, getting kind of petted by people and getting touched by people and having everyone think I was their best friend, mm-hmm. that process of sort of turning me into a product made me terrified for myself. And it also took me out of the community I wrote it from and for. So like some of my friendships did not survive that moment, right? Like being in public left me, I don't know, overworked and not my most graceful self, but also let people see me as a symbol instead of a person, something to like rail against instead of talk to. And I don't, and I'm again, like you're saying, this is not what was me. I made these choices. This is the trajectory that I myself chose. So it's not, no one did this to me, but surviving it has been a lot. Mm-hmm. Surviving it has felt like it was a surprise to me. I'm not surprised when you say that, Kiese. I'm not surprised about where that lives for you.
I'm not either. And I would say, like, listen, like, emerging writers who listen to this podcast, listen to it in company of a mentor. Listen to it in community. Because I will say, I hear what both of you are saying, and I would, to share, for me, the experience of publishing this memoir, all of the dreams I had for the book came true. Mm-hmm. And it really, I mean, sure, there are stumbles, there are, you know, and there were moments and challenges. But for me, the challenge was that the completing the circle was so wonderful and the response was so honeyed. And it felt like, as someone who's very mission-driven, that I had done what very few people, I think, get to do, understand in real time that I had completed a mission that started a long time ago and was rooted in love. When it started to end, I started to feel like, does that mean I have no purpose left in my life?
Wow, that's real shit right there.
Where do I possibly go from here? You know what I mean? Like it was so strange. And it was not anything that I could have ever, you know, imagined kind of being a struggle. But I would argue that, I would say, you know, late winter, January, February, I was really like, I felt very almost ethereal. I felt abstract. Mm-hmm. As if in completing the mission that this book was a part of, you know, I had kind of like atomized myself. And I was like, oh, so who am I after this? Because girl, you did it. This is where the credits are supposed to roll, right? That's right.
time for a short break. When we come back, a sobering confession from Kiese and a bit about bathrobes. Stick around. Welcome back to this bookable conversation with Kiese Lehman, Saeed Jones, and Mira Jacob.
Did you guys have rules for yourself when you were touring? We talked a tiny bit about that, about the feeling of being a product. But did you have like rules that you set up for yourself, like questions you decided, like, I'm not going to answer that one. I'm going to shut that down. Was there anything that comes to mind for that?
Yo, I just learned that you can say that. I'm talking about over pandemic, I was doing a read-in with Common House out of Virginia or somewhere. And there was a comedian who was like the moderator or whatever. And, you know, the moderator was incredible, but it was apparent the fam had not read the book at all, you know? Mm. So he starts asking me all these questions. And he's like, you know, I just want to make sure the audience can get to know you because they haven't read the book. And I'm like, motherfucker, you ain't read the book. Because then he was like, so tell me, do you have kids? And I was like, nah. And he was like, he's like, yo, how come you ain't got no kids, bro? Like, he was like, did you pull out? You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, and then my speakers agency was like, KSA, you can say these words. I appreciate that question, but I don't really feel comfortable. But you know, that book had been out in the world damn near like a year and a half. And you know, I just didn't know you could say that shit. But one of the rules I made for myself but also it's just that transactional stuff, you know, like I'm Southern. It's just like, I still feel it. Like, you know, like I still feel if people give us any time, we owe them whatever they want. Like I need to be honest and say, I know that's fucked up, but that's what I feel. But you know, in terms of rules, like I was just trying to, one of my main rules was like, you out here in these streets by yourself, people read your book, they're going to feel an attraction to your book much more than you. Don't fucking kiss, hug, be sexual with anybody on tour. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just needed to make sure for myself and my health, because that book is still so electric, I didn't want people fucking that book and thinking they were fucking me. Because I hadn't made a distinction between the two. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's where I was.
Oh, wow. That's a good rule. What about you, Saeed? My God.
I mean, that's a great rule. That's a great rule. I will say generally swing, except with a couple of exceptions. I kept my body to myself on book tour.
I'm not grilling you about your sex lives. I'm just asking if you have rules for yourself. I would never.
I would say, you know, for me, I was just like, the way I thought about this book tour was that I was like, this is a very specific experience. It actually doesn't happen that often anymore that major publishers like put writers on like the road. You know what I mean? It feels even more like a relic now in the middle of a pandemic to even talk about a national book tour. So I was like, in the end, you do what you need to do. You know what I mean? Don't let other people's expectations kind of determine. So one of my things was that I was like, you are allowed to cancel on any post event hangout. I don't care if you got family or friend in the town that you were visiting. It does whatever, baby. If you finish that event and you're not up for it, say I'm sorry, I can't do it. You know what I mean? And if you need to, the day of the event, and this was often the case for days of event, like stay in bed in your hotel the entire day. It doesn't matter if you are in the most amazing city and there are all of these things and there's a beautiful bookstore across the street, baby. If you cannot summon the energy to like leave your hotel, you do not have to leave your hotel. That is fine.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you don't have to explain that to anybody. You know what I mean? And I stuck to that. And I'm really glad I did. I'm really glad. And you know, there were exceptions, like certain cities, like Seattle, I remember I like had a day out and I just like kind of went wandering around. But generally speaking, if I was in town for a book event, if you saw me outside of the event, it was like at the hotel restaurant eating dinner that night. You know what I mean? And otherwise, I was just in my room. Because I think for me, something I've learned, it's almost like the better a book event is, the more energy you actually put into it. You don't realize it, but the more you give of yourself, and so the more exhausted you are. And I just find like it's really easy to underestimate the labor we are doing, especially when the lines between sincerity and just like, I'm doing this because it's a job and because I'm being professional or I'm trying to be polite are just so blurred, you know? And so I tend the only way to deal with that is to like really own my private time.
Ugh, that's such a good one. That's such a good one for me. Like the shorthand for that was like, stay in your robe as long as possible.
Oh yes.
You know, just like stay in the robe. Like even if there wasn't a robe, I was like, there's a robe on me. I'm staying in the robe. And the robe meant that I didn't have to interact with anyone that I wouldn't interact with if I wasn't in my robe. Yep. But the other thing that I told myself, you guys, and I don't think I've really talked about this and it's probably going to sound terrible. But I think one of the things, I don't know if this happened to y'all as much. I don't know if it's like a woman thing, but people told me their lives, their pain a lot in the signing line. They told me their horrible incidents and the things that had really wrecked them. And I realized early on that this was going to happen. And especially from like younger people, I never want to turn away in that moment. Because I feel like they've gotten their whole person up to say something about something that mattered to them. Mm-hmm. But I also knew, because I'm also a mom, I was like, that's going to live in you forever if you let it.
Right.
So I gave myself this weird permission, which is that in the moment, you can listen to the story, you can hear the story, you can hold the hand, can do what you need to do. And when it is over, you are allowed to forget.
And I just
developed this really strange tick, which is that after people would leave having told me something, I would just tilt my head to the side and imagine the story like sliding out of me so that I could just face the next thing.
That's real.
And it was just
I also wonder if that's gendered. Because I talked to mentors like Roxane Gay about this very thing, because this is what I was actually worried about the book tour, was that. And I, you know, I'm a gay man, but I'm still a man. And sure, there were some examples of people being like, oh, you know, can you sign this copy for my friend? I remember like in one city, like, can you sign this book for my friend? She couldn't come tonight. Her dad died this morning. You know, like those kinds of parameters. But I found actually what consistently happened and still happens is that people would not say things like that intense in the signature line, which is what I expected, the book signing line. I would get DMs afterwards. My Instagram and Twitter DMs are replete with people who seemingly have finished the book like an hour before.
Right.
And listen, I've read the book. I've reread the end of the book. Honey, I would not advise trying to communicate with anyone. I finished the book and was like, what the fuck? God. It's so overwhelming. But yeah, where people are just understandably like setting themselves free.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do. I mean, sometimes what I've kind of arrived, and frankly, it's like overwhelming. It's like a lot of messages. And it's like random. Like I can't, you know, there's no logic to when I'm going to wake up to 8 DMs like that in one morning. I don't reply unless I have something to say.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I don't want to fumble, and it's deep. And I hear what you're saying. Like it's really, I think it's important to create the terms for people to set themselves free. That's why we write the book. But it's like, I don't know if I'm equipped. Or deserve to be entrusted with like whatever the next step is.
I absolutely am not. I mean, when you say that, I'm like, you don't know. I absolutely know I am not equipped.
Wow. Wait, why do you say that?
Why do I say I'm not equipped? I'm not equipped to handle the trauma that people have lived with their whole lives. I appreciate it. I have held my own trauma, but I am absolutely not equipped to help them with the next step. I'm not equipped to help them make sense of it just because I tried to make sense of my own, and also badly sometimes, right? Like because I waded into that place does not mean like, and Saeed, the thing you said earlier about, you know, when you realized that you were writing a version of yourself where you were abusing yourself in the course of writing it. I also did that. I mean, it's like the ways in which I got my head around my own trauma were not particularly great for me. So I don't want to try to do that with someone else's. Like that's not, that doesn't, I don't feel qualified. I'm also not your mom or your best friend. Like, right. These things to me are sort of like, I want you to get the help you need mm-hmm. because you deserve it. Mm-hmm. You deserve much more than me.
Yeah. I'm not trying to be too clever, but it's somewhat akin to, it's happened a few times, guys who have used the experience of reading the book to hit on me. Right. I have a somewhat similar reaction where I'm like, that's your takeaway? Because you're right. You're kind of like, I'm still here. Right. I made it, and I would like to think that I'm, a more nuanced person. I've gotten better at embracing myself in the years since, you see depicted in the book. But even still, like, I don't think the takeaway from reading How We Fight for Our Lives is that Saeed is necessarily, like, a guru. Uh-huh. Or like a perfect dating match. I don't think that's what I want you to take away.
But you know what? I think Saeed, like, that's such an important point, because I think to some readers, like, completion, like, if you read art that is completed, I think we sometimes tend to believe that that person is completed. And even if the art is, like, all about the lack of completion,
right.
And like, Mira, what you're saying, like, I've been a teacher since I was 22. From over half of my life, I've been teaching. So I was, and not just teaching, but I've been teaching creative writing and creative nonfiction, which in some, way is confessional. And, especially when you meet with students to talk about the shit 101. So I was very versed in listening to people talk about extreme joy and extreme trauma, but the parts of me that are bad as a teacher are also the parts of me that are bad as a writer on tour, because, like, I can listen, but, like, when students start talking to me about disordered eating, what I need to do is be like, I feel you. Would you like to walk over here so we can maybe go talk to somebody who's actually trained at this right. shit? Like, I don't do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm always like, and it has a lot to do with the kinds of people who come talk to me who aren't comfortable going to talk to anybody like that. Right. So I'm sitting in that office trying to give them fucking advice, fucking them up probably, And similarly on tour, so many, cis heterosexual men would come talk to me about, like, incredible eating disorder. I'm talking about, these dudes were, like, traditionally, like, fine. Like, motherfuckers, like, with the V, with the shoulders.
Oh, not with the V.
With the V. They'd be like, yo, man, like, I just want to let you know, you telling my story. And it happens so much. But and it would always be in private when I'm trying to get out the store. And instead of just being like, I so appreciate you talking to me about that. I think, we both on the road. Let's hope we can get this together. Something like that. I'm like, yeah, so tell me more. Like, how do you think you can help this? Before you know it, it's like 5 hours later and nobody got help. What I'm saying? So I just think sometimes I have to be better at just listening, but also saying, like, I wrote this book, but I'm not complete. I'm not fucking, like, I the way I could help you, you saw it. Like, you saw it in the art. Like, I'm not going to be able to help this other way. I don't have that in me yet, but that's what I need to say.
Yes, because that's the thing. Like, the art is the thing that you have worked on and you have crafted. The response to their trauma is not, right? Like, right. One of the things is the thing you can do. The other thing is just the territory you find yourself in for reasons that are mystifying, mm-hmm. Yeah. God, that all hit me. We talked about a little bit things that, and I'm going to let you guys go in just a little bit, but we talked about a little bit about the things that, are said to us on tour that are hard. The things about being in public are hard. And also, Saeed, you said this sort of beautiful thing about reclaiming yourself in this moment, about remembering that there's someone else beyond this, beyond the person who wrote the memoir that became a product that was beyond his wildest dreams, about reclaiming that person. And so, just to kind of close this out, I wanted to ask you guys if you could go back and tell the you that started the memoir, and in some ways tell the, as Saeed, as you were saying, the people who might be listening to this, who should be listening to it with their mentors.
Yes.
You could tell those people something. What would you tell them? Because that's the whole reason I wanted to do this, and I wanted to talk to you guys, because I feel like I wish that I had been told some things. What would you tell them?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, any artistic endeavor is akin to climbing a mountain. And I think culturally we talk a lot about climbing the mountain, and I've been to the mountaintop. We don't pay a lot of mind to the fact that when you get to the mountaintop, you got to climb back down. And then you're in a valley, and where are you going to go? And who knows what the weather's like on the other side? And like, that's fine. That's not your business yet. Climb your mountain. If you've decided to do this, if you care about it, if you are learning something in real time each step of the way, I think that is worth it. I'm not going to say that the wind is coming at a weird angle on the, you know, on the other side of the mountain. That might be possible. You know what I mean? But I think that's just like, that's the next journey, and it may be worth it. And you can't, I think I would wear myself out in the process of working on this book, running scenarios of different ways I thought this was going to work out, mm-hmm. you know, good or bad. I would be thinking 10 steps ahead of where I was, you know, and none of those things have mattered in the end, but they caused me a lot of acrimony in real time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, yes, it, publishing a book like this, it is absolutely the best case scenario, quite frankly, for publishing a memoir is that it throws your life off course. That's the best case scenario. You wake up in Oz. That's what, when people talk about like, I want the awards and the acclaim and the New York Times best, that's what happens. That's what KSA was talking about. That's what success lives like, not looks like, lives like. But that's not your business right now if you're writing the book. And even if it was, you can't deal with it. You can't change it. You can't anticipate it. All you can do is do the work. And I am grateful for all the work I did. You know, so
absolutely.
I love that. I think I would just, I love that question because the thing is, I'm hard headed, so it don't matter if I told my younger self this or not, I wouldn't listen. Mm-hmm. But I just think you should. I think that I would tell my younger self, like, you know, KSA, when you fail, you have to hold yourself accountable. You have to look at, like, you know, think about what reparation looks like in interpersonal relationships, but you can't like attempt to maul yourself in failure because you've succeeded. Mm. That's the hardest thing for me to do in my life. Is like when I fail, like, you know, I don't know about y'all, but like there've been times when I didn't have anything, you know, and when I failed, I didn't beat myself up so much, but like, when I fail now, I think I beat myself up so much because of success. Because I'm not sure why. I'm not sure why. But I would just tell myself, like, hold yourself accountable. Understand the thin line between holding yourself accountable and mutilating yourself for what? For what? For what? You know, like, why? Why are you doing that? Why are you trying to harm yourself even more? Like, why? And that's why I need to go to, I would tell myself that. I know I wouldn't listen to it though, so probably.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's the whole thing, right? You wouldn't listen to it because you all have to write. You have to write the thing that you're going to write, right? And to do that, there are all sorts of different kinds of armor that come on and slip off at any point in time. I think if I were to say anything to myself in the future, it would probably just be like, all the weird feelings that are going to come, these are not from nowhere. They are not some terrible visitation from a land that no one should be in. Like, this is just the process.
Right.
This is just what it looks like. Right. The weirdness is part of it. Find your people. Find the people you can talk to. Find the people that keep you real and honest and can deal with you both at your least successful and your most successful. Like, find your people.
Yes.
And hold them close.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, it's such a difficult thing to say, but I just, and maybe this sounds cold, but I just think for those who are meant to, it will be worth it, and you will finish it. Right. And I don't know, you know, like, unfortunately, like, it's kind of like, you don't know until you know, but I'm like, I don't know. I just felt like, I was like, if the book is supposed to come and be in fruition, I guess I'm going to finish it.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, and I just think relishing the wonder, right? Like, because, you know, one of the things I hear from both of you is that I mean, for example, like if I don't write Heavy the way I wrote Heavy, I can't assume that we would be in conversation right now, right? Mm-hmm. Like I knew both of y'all before Heavy. I knew your work before Heavy. But I feel like I can just be like, I think you writing Good Talk, you know, like selfishly helped me connect with you more. My writing Heavy helped me connect with you more. Saeed, mm-hmm. like, you know, your book meant so much to me and my students. So I'm just saying, like, there's a wonder in the writing of this too, that's all about relationships, though a lot of what we talked about is like the dissembling of relationships. So mm-hmm. so I'm trying to say, I need to remind myself that this book that I wrote selfishly has helped me be loved and love other people in the world. And sometimes I forget that part, which is fucked up to do.
Yeah. Oh, but I love remembering that part. Thank you for remembering that part in this conversation. I so appreciate it. All right, you guys. Well, I want to thank you for talking with me. This has meant the world to me.
Thank you. I needed this.
Yeah, me too. I really appreciate you bringing your whole hearts to this. It really meant a lot to me.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, friends. Be well.
You too.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you.
Thank you, KSA, Saeed, and Mira, for such an incredible conversation. KSA Lehman is the author of Heavy, an American memoir, which was published by Scribner. Saeed Jones is the author of How We Fight for Our Lives, a memoir, which was published by Simon & Schuster. Mira Jacob is the author of Good Talk, a memoir in conversations, which was published by One World. All of these great books are available now. Go and get them. Bookable is a production of Loud Tree Media. I'm your host, Amanda Stern, 5 feet tall or 60 inches of pure vulnerability. We're produced by me, Beau Friedlander, and Andrew Dunn, who also mixes and sound designs the show. Beau is Loud Tree's editor-in-chief. Find us on the web at bookablepod.com and subscribe and rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your shows. And if you want to learn more about our guests, find us on Instagram at bookablepod. And follow me, your host, at A Little Stern. We're back next week with another new episode of Bookable, and we will see you then. This is Bookable.